Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. Hi, Flourish.
And welcome to Fansplaining, the podcast by, for, and about fandom.
So, assuming you've listened to the previous installment of our first two-part episode, Race and Fandom, but this is part two.
Also known as episode 22B. Who came up with this?
22B. I did. 22B. I'm great at naming conventions.
22B. Just see my LinkedIn. Race and Fandom part two. In case you were confused, it is both B and two.
Subsection. Yes. Okay. Just so everyone knows, this is the second part. It'll be hit over the head in the title.
Right. So last time we heard from Holly Quinn, Rukmini Pandey, Shadowkeeper, Cleo, and PJ. If you're confused about what's going on, you should go and listen to that first episode.
Well, I think we can, in 5 seconds or less, explain.
Are you going to be that kind to people? I'm not.
Wow. All right. So I'm pretty sure that if you made it here, you've listened to the last segment, but the last installment, rather. If for some reason you randomly clicked on this, this is the second part of our big Race and Fandom episode, which very briefly came out of our last episode where we talked to Destination Toast to analyze his fandom stats and did this Star Wars post that got a lot of traction that showed that the Finn Poe ship, that's Finn, John Boyega's character, and Oscar Isaac's character Poe, which was initially seen to be the big juggernaut, kind of lost steam pretty quickly and has now been surpassed by Kylo Ren and General Hux. Space Nazis.
Right. And there was also a meta that came out around the same time that dealt with issues of race and fandom and came under a lot of fire for that. The meta was by Francesca. You can find information about both of these in the show notes. And we also talked about it a little more in the last episode. And our guests are going to be taking them on too.
Right. So, yeah. So if you haven't been enmeshed, is that the word I want?
Yeah.
All right. Great. Enmeshed in this discourse and you're looking for more context, definitely check out the show notes. But, if you are, this has definitely been present on my dash, so I'm assuming if we have similar dashes. I shouldn't assume that any of us have similar dashes, but it is a big
conversation. You shouldn't assume that some of our listeners don't have dashes. A dash is a thing on Tumblr, guys who don't do Tumblr.
Tumblr.com. Yes, it's like your newsfeed for Tumblr.
Look at you.
I know everyone
reaching
has Facebook.
To people who are not like you.
Tumblr users. It's true. Look, I'm an internet expert, so I really shouldn't assume.
Anyway, we're going to have a slate of great contributors. We're going to have some people who've prepared statements, and we're going to have two interviews.
So as you know from the last episode, when we talked about this with Destination Chose, we put out a call for fans of color. If you listened, you know that we had a big response. And so this is the second batch of people. There's five of them.
So we are going to have statements from Roz, from Tracy Ann Canada, and from Zvi Likes TV. And we're going to be interviewing Jeffrey Lyles of Lyles Movie Files and Xena, who operates Stitch Media Mix on Tumblr. So we're really looking forward to that. We're going to have sort of a statement and then an interview and then a statement and then an interview and then a statement.
Right.
So should we have our first statement?
Yes, we should. You've laid it all out so clearly.
All right, let's go. Let's
hear
Roz.
It's Roz, who is my friend from college and who you've heard on this podcast before, I believe.
I think so.
Oh, yeah. She was the one who had read Carry On without having read Harry Potter. Roz is a unicorn.
That was magical.
Yeah.
What a unicorn.
Yeah. Amazing.
All right, let's hear from her unicorn perspective.
Absolutely. All right.
Hi, Fansplaining. This is Roz. I am primarily involved in the X-Men fandom. I also was pretty heavily involved in the Veronica Mars fandom, writing fic. I run challenges currently in X-Men for the most part, and I also write for a website called Nice Girls TV, where I talk about a lot of other shows that I actively engage in as a fan, but I'm not, like, overtly fanish in the I need to create media. To your questions, do I see fandom being implicitly racist? And the answer is no, but I think there's a other thing going on. So, I'm African American and I'm Jewish, and that has sort of put me in a weird spot my entire life. Being a mixed race kid who's also Jewish, I don't really fit into a lot of different spaces. And while I've been in X-Men, there's been a lot of people that take really great care to write Eric's Jewishness as accurately as they can. But a lot of people don't when I've been running challenges, don't necessarily want to get it wrong. And so they don't really know how, they don't want to write it so that they don't get it wrong. They'd rather not offend somebody than they would offend somebody by saying something that is not correct. So I've, you know, had people ask me, how do you celebrate a birthday as a Jew? And I'm like, you don't. And, you know, like people ask me about Hanukkah and other things. And I sort of say, okay, here's some information based on my specific brand of Judaism. And I just sort of leave it alone. But those people are asking, but some people don't ask. So I don't necessarily know if people in fandom are trying to not write characters of color or characters that don't fit into this sort of stereotypic waspy situation, or if it's just that they don't know about something and they don't want to get it wrong, because I think we live in a world where we're much quicker to be offended than we are to be consoled by the fact that somebody wants to take the time to try and get it right. So I could probably go look it up and find out that Tony and Steve and Steve and Bucky have way more fics in the MCU than Steve and Sam or Tony and Roddy. And I don't know if that's racism or if that's just we like tragic backstories or something else. In Veronica Mars, with the character that was non-white and Veronica Mars, it was that the non-white guy didn't have a whole lot of screen time. So if you were going to write fic, you had to make a series of jumps to get your story started, whereas if you're shipping the guys or the characters, let me be less general and not think just of Slash, you're going to write the people that you see more often. And that's just kind of the way it is. I think that's the way I've sort of seen race approached is, you know, it's a thing that exists. I know that it exists. I know I live it, but I live it in a way that's probably different living in the suburbs as a mixed kid than my cousins that grew up in Los Angeles being African American. And that's just kind of the way it is. And I don't know that that's implicit racism or if it's just they write what they know. To your second question, do I think fandom perceptions on race have affected me personally? No, because there's like three characters on the planet right now that are probably mixed race, and even fewer of them that are Jewish, so like, I don't see people like me in media, and that is not a thing that bothers me. I don't think it's people trying to be racist. I think it is just Hollywood as a system casts white people a whole lot more, which may be implicitly racist on some sort of like systemic level that I can't figure out or that I don't know about. Have fandom's attitudes on race changed over time since I've been involved with fandom? So I don't know. I got involved in fandom really late. I got involved through the OC in 2004, but I was sort of fanish about stuff without knowing about fandom because I'm one of those like old millennials who's right on the outer edge. So I just saw TV as TV, and that was kind of where it went. And I just sort of, you know, I saw characters on ER or on any of the other stuff I watched that looked like me, maybe, but I didn't really think about them as, like, I wasn't shipping people. Even if I loved, I can't think of the ER ship, but there were like two African-American characters and I kind of loved them and they were great. But I don't necessarily think that them not getting together, them getting broken up was racist so much as it was just the way the storytelling wanted to go. What is the best solution I think fans of color can have to improve situations where they feel like they are underrepresented? I don't know that there's an answer that I can't think of one. And that may be that I'm part of the problem that I write about white guys more than I write about people of color, but I think you do need to be present, you do need to talk, you do need to express your frustration. If we're talking about Hamilton and the backlash that white people were having auditioning because they couldn't audition, you're missing the point of the play, or the musical, I should say, so you're not going to try out for that thing because you're not supposed to try out for that thing. But you have to be mindful of finding your space and how to say that it is your space in a way that is not destructive or hurtful, but is still impactful. So it's making the protest in a way that is not, I'm just going to be yelling from the rooftops so I can yell at the rooftops, and making it a constructive response. I guess that's the answer that I can think of. Thank you guys for letting me talk. Bye.
Okay, so that was Roz. Next up, we're going to interview Jeffrey Lyles, who is not a fan fiction fandom person. He actually came to us, I think, through my friend Leslie, who's also a movie reviewer, and he's a movie reviewer and a super dedicated Star Wars fan. He got his start writing reviews at Howard University's The Hilltop, and then was the film critic for the Gazette newspapers. Now he has his own site, lylesmoviefiles.com, and he is so much of a Star Wars fan that he had a Star Wars wedding, so I hear.
Spoiler.
Spoiler.
So I was really pleased that Jeffrey reached out to us because I often wonder when we have discussions within, like, transformative, female-dominated fandom, and it often feels to me like, you know, like, well, I can't think of Star Wars any differently now, right? Basically, you know, in this particular instance, and I can think of a lot of other analogous things where I'll just see a lot of meta and I'll be like, well, this is the only way you could ever think about this thing, you know, and then I'll go.
But there's an entire world of people who are not part of fan fiction fandom who are extraordinarily dedicated to Star Wars nonetheless.
Right. You know, I have this a lot when I'll be like, especially when I was living in England and I would be like, so deep in, like, Sherlock fan, and I'd just be like, and thinking about, like, the way that transformative and fan fiction fandom or Tumblr fandom thought about the show, and then I would just talk about it with literally anyone in the street, you know, like, and they'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'd be like, oh, you don't? You're not familiar with all this, like, stuff. So that, none of that's to say that anything that we talk about in our spaces is not important. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying.
No,
I'm really
but there's
glad
a lot
some...
of people who are not part of that space. So
yes, I am excited
them
for
say
the perspective.
Things.
Yes.
So should we call Jeffrey?
Yeah, because I'm desperate to know what non-fanfiction fans think of this.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. All right. We're super excited to have Jeffrey on the podcast. Thanks so much for coming on.
Definitely. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay. So you are our like one non-fan fiction person. So thank you for taking up that mantle. But I'm wondering if you want to talk about, to start off for context, like, I know you're a film critic, but you're definitely a fan too. So if you want to talk all about your work or your fanish experience.
Sure. I was sucked into Star Wars right away with the first one. I very vividly remember watching Empire Strikes Back, The Drive, and that fully sucked me into this whole franchise. I've been a diehard ever since. I'm one of the few defenders of the prequels. Have all the movies, have a ton of posters, ton of action figures. And for my wedding, my wife and I came out to lightsabers for our reception.
Oh my God.
Yes,
that's amazing.
Has lightsabers and the Rebel Alliance symbol on it. So yeah, super diehard Star
Wars
fan. Oh
my God,
hey, this is incredible! All right, that you have proven your fanish credentials, 100%. Okay, so diehard fan forever. Mm-hmm. I am just going to assume that you were excited about The Force Awakens when you heard about it in the beginning. Is that correct? Or
Totally.
Okay.
Totally was excited. It was one of those things where I remember very vividly in the press screening for Revenge of the Sith thinking, oh man, this is the last time I'm going to see a new Star Wars movie. And just really like, oh, I was sad and excited at the same time. And to hear that we're actually going to get some more movies was really exciting. I was still a huge fan of J.J. Abrams. So when he was tabbed to direct it, I was so excited and just, you know, I couldn't get enough of it. But I know the way he does his movies, that he doesn't reveal much of anything, which is great because you can just go in watching in cold and not know much of anything. So, you know, just seeing a few images and the pictures and the trailers, it's like every little bit that we got excited me even more about it.
When the casting stuff was announced, I'm just going to assume you were very excited that the lead was going to be a black man. Is that an incorrect assumption?
It was really, it was really cool because I was, boy, back in last year, I went to AwesomeCon and I saw Ernie Hudson. And I just thanked him because I was like, it was so cool growing up as, a black young man and not really seeing a lot of guys reflective of me in sci-fi in particular. I mean, we were starting to kind of branch out into action movies more as the, not necessarily the sidekick, but the other partner to the main character. And that kind of plays out still now, but it was cool seeing Winston right there with the other Ghostbusters battling in the end and not getting killed off midway through the movie. In the same way, it was when they introduced Billy Dee Williams as Lando Calrissian in Empire Strikes Back. It was like, in a subconscious level, because I wasn't thinking, oh, great, they've got a black guy in here. It was like, oh, cool, there's somebody else like me. But growing up, looking back, I was like, they really didn't have a lot of black guys in these kind of movies. So, yeah, so it was really cool when J.J. Abrams was announced as the director of Force Awakens. I loved all of his stuff. Big fan of Lost, big fan of Mission Impossible 3, and was just really excited to see that he was going to be doing this one. When they were we're talking about it, he was the one guy who was like, oh, he did amazing work with the Star Trek franchise, and I was really hoping that they could kind of convince him to come over to the quote unquote big leagues. I know all the Trekkies won't like that, but for me, it's always been Star Wars. And then when they started revealing the cast and started showing a few more promotional pictures, I was really excited to see Finn front and center, not to the side, holding a blue lightsaber, and really being prominent in all the advertising. No one knew what his role was going to be. No one knew what he was going to do in the movie. But it was just cool that he was right there in the mix of everything and not to the side. And it was just like, oh man, what are they going to do with this guy?
And then when you saw it.
It was funny because, it's like with every J.J. Abrams movie, you never know what you're going to get until you're sitting down in there watching it. And so as the movie started to unfold, it was like, oh, wait a second. He's not Luke Skywalker. He's Han Solo. And it was really interesting because it was like, oh, okay. And I thought it was cool because, he got his chance to swing the lightsaber for a little bit. So he wasn't just, the scoundrel, wisecracking sidekick guy. He was doing heroic things. He was right in the middle. It wasn't false advertising. He actually was using the lightsaber. He wasn't a Jedi master or even a Padawan, but, he was trying to do his thing with it. So it was cool. But I thought it was fine because I didn't see that coming, and I liked that he was able to be the Han Solo of this new trilogy. So, how when you talk to people now who've grew up watching the original trilogy, Han Solo is always their favorite character. So maybe 20, 30 years from now, Finn will be everyone's favorite character.
Or what about right now?
It's so funny to me because, growing up in the 80s, I watched a lot of TV and cartoons where, not to say they had a token female, but I mean, there was Scarlet and G.I. Joe, Teal'c and He-Man, and and so forth.
The only
And so,
Smurf. How did
yeah,
do they
and the
make baby
Smurfette,
Smurfs? No one
right.
knows.
The Stork Smurf came by. For me, it was always this thing of like, well, yeah, of course there's a strong female character. One of my favorite movies in the 80s was Aliens. And Ripley did her thing in there. And even Empire Strikes Back, Princess Leia wasn't the damsel in distress character. She was right there shooting up all the stormtroopers and doing her thing. So it was weird to me hearing all these people going, finally, there's a strong female character in Star Wars. And I was like, well, did everybody forget Princess Leia? So anyway, it was just kind of weird. I thought it was funny that people kind of acted like Finn didn't matter as much. There's so much outrage from the other side of humanity where it's like, I can't believe there's a black stormtrooper. And it's like, oh boy. Okay. Well, anyway, this guy's a character. It's like everybody else. We can have a bunch of clones, but we can have a black stormtrooper. I like that he had an actual story arc where he didn't want to do this. He didn't like the whole thought of being forced into a war. And then in the end, he just started trying to do the good thing. And sometimes in these movies, you'll see the black guy being bitter and cynical and mad. He wasn't like that. He provided a lot of the humor and was a good, optimistic character. And what I liked the most about Finn was he wasn't a black guy. He wasn't an Asian guy. He wasn't a white guy. He was just a guy. And, to more advanced people, he's just a character in the Star Wars universe. Those who can't get past the color, I don't know what you would especially in Star Wars, because it's not like Lando didn't exist and he was a pretty
Right.
significant character. So I never really understood people who were hating on Finn, because it's like Star Wars, hello?
Yeah, didn't
I
you
mean, there's
watch
some,
those movies?
yeah, I mean, Lando was the guy who blew up the second Death Star. I mean, he wasn't sitting in the background getting killed. He wasn't Red Seven or something. So yeah, I thought it was cool. And, you know, and I also liked how in the movie, how we saw different kind of, you know, all kinds of races represented. We had like an Asian X-Wing fighter who's also a female. And then we had some other races. And Rogue One just looks like it's going to drive all the races crazy because it's got so many different races in it. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. But back to Finn, I just thought he was fun, he was cool, and I mean all kinds of different parts to his character, like how he got the jacket, which was actually Poe's and not his to start. And it was just cool watching his story arc progress. And I'm very excited to see how it goes forward in the next two films.
Well, okay, so I think you hear a lot of people saying that kind of line you hear it in fantasy too, like, oh, you can imagine all these fantastical elements. It's so hard to wrap your head around the idea that like this universe isn't only populated by white guys. It's interesting because I feel like it sounds like it's working on multiple levels for you. Like, you're happy to see a black male lead, but it's also you're like, well, he's just a Star Wars character, you know? Is that do you, does that sound like a fair characterization of what you're saying?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it was funny because I was in this weird time frame, like with the 80s, where I guess more filmmakers were trying to at least have, you know, what some people, like in the 90s, would then refer to as the token black, the token whatever. I just saw it as them including more people, or being more inclusive and not just sticking to the norm. Because it would be easy. It would have been really easy for Lando to have been a white guy. No one would have batted an eye. I wouldn't have disliked Empire Strikes Back any more from it just having white guys. But the fact that it does have a black guy makes it so much cooler to me. Just because it expands the universe so much more. And I think for kids who are watching Star Wars for the first time with Force Awakens, they're going to see it and be like, oh, cool. And they're not going to know, like, hey, it's a black guy, it's a Latino guy, it's a white female. They're just going to be like, these are Star Wars characters. But as they grow up and as they hear more of, you know, other races are inferior and why are they in this movie, they're going to be like, wow, that was pretty cool. This movie was pretty groundbreaking for us in terms of being a better representation. There's no white male in this movie. And
Yeah.
arguably the one white male, and he gets killed. So, spoiler.
Spoiler.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Well, his
Sorry.
Kylo Ren is
Sorry.
pretty white.
Yeah.
He's the whiniest white guy.
He's the
Yeah, oh,
worst.
it's so sad.
He's the worst.
Here's a question. Like, I mean, I guess this is related to some of what we were saying before. A lot of the people that we've been talking to in the fan fiction context, it's been about like, okay, well, like, what's your imagination of the story after the movie itself. And a lot of people who have been disappointed that Finn and Poe have become less popular in fan fiction in comparison to the, you know, white space Nazis. I think I'm being fair to say that they've felt like, man, it's so disappointing that people are so interested in white space Nazis that they don't want to like populate their imagination with the actual heroes of this film who are, you know, people of color and are really interesting. But I wonder a little bit, like, is that just like fan fiction fandom that's having this problem? Like, you are broadly connected to Star Wars fandom as a whole. Do you feel like there's been a general embrace of both Finn and Poe that has not gone away at all?
Necessarily think people are down so much on Finn and Poe from what I'm seeing. Yeah, I mean, like the comments that I get from people are just like, hey, it's pretty cool. But then I also don't get a lot of the, I can't believe they've got this black guy on here. Now, I remember very vividly when I got out of the movie and I was just on Twitter trying to gauge the you know, response to the characters and like seeing how everybody thought about Ben and Rey and all that. And I know there were some not so nice things on Twitter, if you can believe that, about Finn and Rey.
Shocking.
I know, like everyone's normally so polite and, you know, considerate on there. But yeah, I mean, so that I've definitely seen both sides of it. I've seen it, in, you know, with, I don't know if you guys watch Supergirl, but with James Olsen, definitely seen the side where people are upset about his changeover to a black guy and don't like the fact that he's kind of the romantically interested in Supergirl. So, you know, I definitely do see that other side. I think for the most part, people just want to see good, well-written characters now.
Yeah.
Man, the race to, I mean, I think it's more of a, it's this huge celebration, especially if there's a female lead, than it is like, oh wow, we're changing, people's perception on race. Like I said, I think it's gonna be one of those deals where later on, this generation of kids, who are like 10 or 12, are gonna be like, wow, that was really important, or that was a big deal to have all this. I mean, because they're not gonna, that's gonna be their norm. They're not gonna be like, wow, can you imagine there was a time when there were just white guys as the heroes? So, I think that's
Right.
kind of cool.
I mean, that's encouraging. I just feel like, these gatekeepery, like white guy, do you just assume that's going to happen in this situation? And like, it's just a reflection of society? Or, if you say like, oh, Star Wars coming out, female lead, black male lead, I wasn't surprised by anything that happened, but that doesn't mean it's not upsetting. You know what I mean? Like, I'm wondering what your perception of it was. Like, in advance, there was a huge backlash and people like tweeting about like hashtag white genocide, whatever that means, because I'm still unclear what that means. I don't
I
know.
think
Yeah,
it's
I guess
just
I'm.
weird because it's not like TV has just lost all the white guy lead shows. I mean, it's, you can look on any show, any network, at any, in prime time. It's not like, whoa, where'd the white guys go? They're all still there. And look on the movies, on the movie posters, they're all, predominantly still got the same faces, in some cases, literally the same faces we've seen for the last 20 years. So it's just weird. I think it's more of a thing now where every person and every idiot has access to a phone, to Twitter, to Facebook, and can say stuff where before you didn't necessarily have to hear it. Yeah, and you could control more or less what you took in. Like you could surround yourself with people who didn't think like that, and you would never know it. And I know I read something, Billy D. Williams was getting a lot of flack when he was cast as Harvey Dent in, the Tim Burton Batman. And he didn't get as much backlash as Michael Keaton got from being cast as Batman. People were like complaining, why is Mr. Mom here? Let's go with, other white guy actor. And I think it's just one of those things where it's like, because everybody has a voice, everyone feels obligated to use their voice, even when they don't need to. And I think, for this generation that's coming up after us, they're way more, way more empowered, and they feel more empowered to use their voice and to make their social media impressions and every thought known. So, I think we're still going to see a lot of those people. Wait, why are we getting rid of all the white guys? And, if there's one movie that has a black lead, one thing that was actually pretty encouraging after I watched Civil War, I didn't hear a lot of people complaining about or asking about White Panther. Where's White Panther? So that was good. I was like, great. I think it's
Where's
really
my
just a matter of
panther?
how you present it. I think Finn is a he's a good character to go forward with because he's not threatening. He's not, I mean, he's just a dude. It's not like he's talking about growing up on some Tatooine hood or something. He just is a regular guy. And, he's doing his thing. And I think for even the closed-minded audience members, that kind of exposure is necessary because those kind of connections are positive reinforcements, even if they don't see it right away. It's like, okay, he's just a regular guy. He's not threatening to rape all the women and take over all the corporate jobs. He's just a guy. So.
Okay, so I have one last question, and because you are like a super old school Star Wars fan, so I'm wondering what your take on this is. Because one of the criticisms that I've seen, and I actually have had it made to my face by some well-meaning, nice white male friends, is that it was a bad movie because it was just a rehash of everything that had come before. And I, of course, give my knee-jerk liberal response of yes, but like different people got to have their turn at this story, and that's more valuable than you being sad. Like, did you feel if those are the two sides of the coin, like, oh, complaining that it was just recycled from the earlier movies, do you think that's a valid criticism? Or, because obviously.
I do. I really like Force Awakens, but it's probably my fourth favorite of the franchise.
Four
Because
out
of
of
that
seven.
complaint. For me, in case you're curious, it's still Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars, Revenge of the Sith, and then Force Awakens. Just because Force Awakens really does check off a lot of the boxes of Star Wars. Old Mentor gets killed, heroes found in the sandy area, mysterious black guy and who has temper issues. And that kind of, I mean, and that kind of thing, and cute robot that helps out occasionally. So there are a lot of familiar themes. I wish there was a little bit more, kind of things to help stand it out and make it its own story. But I'm with you. I think it's cool that, they weren't saying the exact same thing, and or Finn or Rey didn't have to use a ship to blow up the Death Star. So I mean, I definitely get those complaints though. And that's for me why it's not my favorite. I've heard some people say, "Oh, it's my favorite Star Wars film." I'm like, "Eh." Empire Strikes Back, but I get
Could
that
it,
one.
it's like, I shouldn't assume. It's I love that my immediate response is like, no, you're just being sexist and racist when dudes say this to me, because it's like it is true that like you can have, I mean, since I have no strong feelings about Star Wars, I was like, that was entertaining, and I walked away. So
You should have seen our conversations around Star Wars. I was like, Star Wars, and she was like, oh, that movie that I'll see.
Maybe
Hey,
later and eventually.
I saw it twice, all right? I enjoyed it. So,
Nice job.
Thanks. Thank you. That was a delightful conversation.
Extremely. It was really wonderful to hear from somebody in affirmational instead of transformational fandom about how they felt about Star Wars and what all this is, right?
Yeah, it makes me curious to talk to more affirmational fans, actually.
Hashtag podcast goals.
Yeah. Anyone really like wikis?
Right.
Wikis and only wikis? I don't know what's affirmational fandom. You think I was a fan culture expert? You'd be wrong.
I had this fantasy. Okay, well, why don't we instead of getting
Mired in possibly meaningless distinctions about divisions of fandom.
Yeah, let's hear from Tracy Ann Canada instead, who sent us a clip to play.
Oh, and who on Twitter just today, I believe, said that we had inspired her to write an article about race and shipping.
Yeah, so we'll repost that. Let's hear what she has to say.
I'm Tracy, and I'm currently in the Marvel, Teen Wolf, Check Please, Star Wars, and Harry Potter fandoms. I predominantly read and write fic. How do I see racism underlying fandom's pairing preference? I definitely see the racism. Friends to lovers is one of the biggest tropes in fandom, but when one half of that pairing or both is a person of color, then suddenly it's not the most popular pairing anymore. In Teen Wolf, Scott and Stiles are best friends, but Stiles and Derek is the most popular pairing, therefore ignoring the Hispanic kid in favor of the two white dudes. Same with Psych. You would think Gus and Sean would be the biggest pairing since it's canon that they care for each other so much that they're willing to move for each other, to include each other in their wedding proposals, and they can't picture a life without each other. But it's Sean and Lassie that are the biggest pairing, the white-on-white pairing ignoring the black dude. How has fandom's attitudes on race impacted me personally? I don't know how it really has affected me personally, other than making it really hard for me to find fic of my OTPs. But seriously, it has made it harder for me to do simple things like cosplay, because as a black woman, there are so few female black characters that would be recognized. It's easy to be a Sherlock, Irene, or Molly, but what could you really do to cosplay Sally? It has also led me in my academic life to study race within fandom. Has fandom's attitudes on race changed over the time I've been involved in fandom? Well, I've been involved in fandom for most of my life, over 15 years. During this time, it has become more popular to call out the fact that fandom regularly ignores characters of color in favor of white characters, and there has been active pushback to explore why this happens and to bring more characters of color to the forefront. So yeah, there has been change, and I think the change has been a positive one. What are the best constructive steps fans of color can make to improve the situation? What about white fans? I'm not sure there's much that we as fans can do. A lot of the power of what characters can be used comes from the powers that be. But as fans, we do have the power to continue to push for inclusion, continue to push for the examination behind the motives of choosing white pairings over pairings with characters of color. That is within our hands. That is something we can explore.
So that was Tracy Ann. Next up, we're going to be interviewing Zena. She is Afro-Caribbean and queer, active in the DC and Marvel Comics fandoms as a fic writer, and she writes a lot of meta for Star Wars. And I quote her in saying, "I get my kicks out of rubbing my critical fanish hands over everything y'all love," which I think is amazing. I cannot wait to talk to her.
No, Zena wins the prize for bias. Okay. Bio press.
Should we call her?
Yes, yes, please.
All right. Okay, let's welcome Zena to the podcast.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent response.
Oh, that's perfect.
So we've been following you on Tumblr because you've written some really great things about the infamous meta. And we were hoping that you could share a little bit of that. You know, walk us through some of the things you've been critiquing about it.
Really, the instigating meta is not the big meta, although it's the one that's angering people the most. The meta writer, Francesca, wrote one specifically about the shipping in the Star Wars fandom, in which she lists racism, boring ships, and kink shaming as the reasons why people are no longer shipping Finn and Poe. Except she dismisses racism right out the bat by going, "I don't think it's as big a reason as people are saying," which, I mean, that's wrong. And it's very dismissive to say something like that, especially if you are not a person of color. I'm pretty sure she's not, but I'm not about that identity policing, so anybody can fuck up.
So here's a distinction that I'm wondering, because I have read both these meta. Well, actually, I only read the first chapter of the one that was specifically about Finn Poe, because it just got right into details about kink. And I don't read kink, so it's like it's even very foreign to me, though I respect everyone who does. My clarification that, I mean, maybe you're going to get to this, and so I don't want to jump the gun, but like the dismissing of straight up racism is the suggestion that people don't want to even go near the ship because they are not interested in people of color. And they, is that, whether that's something blatant or like, you know, systemic and internalized?
I think I'd look more towards, because nobody's saying, "I don't like Finn and Poe as a ship or as individuals because they're people of color." What we're seeing is a lot of "they're not as interesting" or straight up "they're boring" when compared to characters like Hux, who has like 10 lines. And like I'm saying, all of those lines tend to be, "Kylo Ren did something bad and I'm upset." So, not really.
She does give that little Nazi speech.
That too. And the fact that people in fandom are more protective of his image. I mentioned on Tumblr last week that, well, he's a Nazi. And someone informed me in a very condescending way that the word I was looking for was fascist. Because space Nazis aren't nationalistic. Except...
Wow. That's a what actually, or a well actually right there. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry.
The image that people have of racism is that they have to actively do something racist, like top 10 cross-burning, sheet-wearing, slur-slinging racism. Yeah. But it's really, anyone can enact racism. I can be racist towards someone who's Latina. Right now, I could fuck up in a huge way, you know? Mm-hmm. And being a person of color does not mean that you can't be racist or that you can't enact white supremacy. And even in fandom spaces, people really don't seem to understand that just because you're in fandom, that doesn't mean that you're not capable of recoding what people of color go through in real life. Like, you're not exempt from racism just because you're like, oh yeah, it's all about my ships. I'm doing this because of pleasure. Because your desire can be wrong. They're like opinions. Everyone has something. Doesn't mean they're right.
Right. So would you, if I'm understanding correctly, then one comparison might be to people who, I don't know, go on a dating website and say, oh, I want to date Asian women.
Yes.
And they say, well, this is just my desire. I desire Asian women. But of course, that's vastly problematic. Like, you can have that desire, but like, you should think about where it comes from and why, right? Is that a good comparison? I think
it is. An even better one on the similar note would be Grindr. No fats, no femmes, no rice. The idea of, it's just my preference that I don't want people who don't look a thing like me in any way whatsoever. Idea that you can't be judged because of what you like. One of the things that you see in pushback to Meta or responses to Meta, like the big one, is that you're not allowed to go, well, this is racist. Your idea of what is okay or what is acceptable is racist or it's heterocentric. And that's part of the issue with the Meta, is that it frames desire as unimpeachable. You can't push against it. You can't look critically at it. Fandom is fandom, and it's always going to be fandom. And if you interrupt or interject, you're harshing someone's squee.
Right. And people were saying like, oh, but this is my safe space where I go to get away from all that. And it's like,
what is fandom a safe space?
Fandom is never.
This frustrates me.
The idea of safe spaces in fandom is actually super upsetting because it's never for queer people. It's never for people of color. Fandom as a safe space tends to center on straight white women, as in the people who have the best experiences in fandom. If your fandom experience is a safe one, either you're a marginalized person who just went fuck it and you've, you know, made yourself into a little group, you have your clique and you don't interact outside of it, or you're a straight white woman who has no idea what it actually is to be marginalized for your race. Or your sexuality. I mean, not every single straight white woman in fandom is terrible. That would be really problematic to say. But in my experience, a lot of the people who are responding to posts like mine, I have a post on slash shipping. It's very mean because I was very angry at the time that I made it, where I talk about how your slash ship isn't inherently progressive because you have these two white dudes boning. Because that's all fandom does. And they're always white, they're always cis, they're always relatively conventionally attractive. Because, I'm sorry, Tom Hardy's not that cute all the time. No, he's not.
Now we're gonna get hate mail, man.
He's cute occasionally.
No, I agree with you, and I've been a slasher for 15 years. And yeah, and I get very frustrated when people are like, acting like it's some great progressive gay rights thing that you're writing about, you know, just the two random dudes on your show. It's not, you know?
And they frame it, the framing is what pisses me off. We are progressive because we ship Steve and Bucky, although A-plus ship, right? But you're not progressive for it. Progressive stops at fandom because from the outside, no one's shipping these two characters. The canon is heterocentric, but from the inside, yes, canon is queered, but it's queered only towards white guys. You know, one of the arguments about shipping Steve and Bucky, like when people are like, well, why are you all shipping this? This is, you know, oversaturation. They're like, well, you're being homophobic. And it's like, okay. But also, no one is saying don't ship your ship. And that's another thing with the Star Wars meta that I'm having an issue with, is that people are reacting to it as if we're saying, don't ship Kylo Ren and Rey, or don't ship Kylo Ren and Hux, when it really is, look why you're shipping them. Why is it so easy for you to look at this character who has, like, 10 lines, and this other character who throws tantrums, and go, they're perfect for each other, you know? Why is it that their interactions are more interesting to you? As a viewer, as a consumer of media, as a part of fandom. Nobody's really thinking critically when they respond. I've been getting a lot of, well, don't tell me what to ship. Stop kink shaming me. which is hilarious. So hilarious. I get a lot of, well, you have problematic ships, so you can't tell people what to ship. Oh my god, yeah, I do have problematic ships. I'm a problematic person. That's how it works. But I'm never going to sit there and say my problematic ship is better than your problematic ship.
Yeah.
It's probably worse.
Yeah, one of the things that really struck me when I was looking at this, so I've, you know, I mean, I came out of Star Wars as everybody did going, ah, oh, Finn and Rey are probably going to get together, but Finn and Poe are so cute together. And like, yay, you know, and then I didn't really read any fic or engage with it, particularly beyond that, you know, being really excited for, you know, just new Star Wars. So in preparation for this episode, I decided to go through and look at some of the Finn Poe and look at like, okay, like what are the longest fics in Finn Poe? Like, you know, shall I read a little bit in here? You know, I was really surprised to discover that if you go to the Archive of Our Own and sort by longest fics, the secondary pairing in basically every Finn Poe like novel length fic is either Kai Lux or Reylo.
Yep.
Which makes perfect sense, right? Because the two ships don't actually like prevent each other. You know, sure. It's not like there's anybody right. shared within those ships. Right.
Wait, so of course,
like how is it possible then that people who really like Finn Poe could be telling you not to do the other thing? They aren't mutually exclusive.
It's so weird to me.
That's so I would be really curious to know that if I bet the reverse is not true though. I bet a lot of the Kai Lux shippers who are doing straight up Kai Lux don't have a background Finn Poe pairing.
No, you're right.
Because this is blowing my mind right now.
The longest Kai Lux story I read had no other pairings. It was, and it's
that
one
sounds
of the,
about right.
Yeah,
I feel like this happens with the because I know people in Inception fandom too. The kind of I don't want to call them invented ships. But, you know, the ones that have very
but
little
canonical
factor.
But you may have just said that they were invented ships because they kind of are.
They are.
But we were just discussing this and it's like, I love the idea. I love that invented ships exist. I love that fans are like, we're just creating some characters based on literally nothing. Obviously, the problem is that they're always the same, like, types of people who get to be in the invented ship.
I'm really a huge fan of Inception and Arthur Eames is my go-to ship. I call them my unproblematic ship. And I say that non-ironically, I usually mean it because of the way that fandom has developed the characters. There's a piece of meta that I can link to where some person goes, where the idea of the blank slate exists. Arthur and Eames are formed out of this blank slate wherein fandom now headcanons Arthur almost uniformly as Jewish, which is awesome. But then, characters like Saito get none of that. Characters of color don't get to be blank slates. We're written off as boring from the get-go. We don't get that exploration. We don't get to see characters of color with backstories fleshed out by fandom. A really good example is not actually anyone from Inception, but Darcy from Thor. Darcy is shipped with everyone. She's shipped with Steve. She's shipped with Bucky. She's shipped with me at this point. Right? But she's not shipped with characters of color that she's interacted with. She's rarely shipped with characters of color in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. She's shipped with these characters above their canon love interests, like Steve and Peggy, or now Steve and Sharon. I mean, Steve and Sharon has been a thing for like 50 years, but whatever. So she's getting way more screen time. You get Jewish headcanons, which I love that a lot of these blank slates are headcanon as Jewish. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Let's do more of that. But you definitely don't see anything similar. We don't have fandom-wide, Darcy's parents are. Mm-hmm. That similar sign of adoration carried over to, like, Sam.
Right. Sure.
And that's where the idea of blank slates and the imaginary ships kind of fall flat, because it's not we like minor characters, we want to build them up. It's we like minor white characters and want to build them up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing that's always stunned me is the fact that there's like almost no Tony Stark and Rhodey fic, which seems to me to be the most obvious like college like hookup that there could ever be.
Is college hookup a popular thing that you like? That's interesting.
No, but I mean, like, it seems like it would be an obvious, like, if you're going to come up with a backstory for your character, like, obviously Tony and Rhodey did it at some point. Like, surely, right? Like,
oh, I'm
in
so
Slash
sure.
logic.
Yeah, because they're already so, it's not like you see the friendship develop. Like, they are already so close in the beginning. It's right. True. Now I'm going to ship them. Thanks a lot, Flourish.
You need
migratory
to,
slash. Can I ask a question that you totally don't have to answer, but do you put any stock in the idea that white people are afraid of screwing up?
I don't.
When writing characters of color. Okay, so I don't want to turn this into a therapy session about me, but like I'm writing a fic right now with a bunch of OCs, and most of them, it's set in London where I recently lived. And so actually the majority of them are people of color because that's realistic. And I'm just sitting here going like, I can't think about this too much. I can't think I'm going to do this wrong because then I am going to like psych myself up. But like, it feels like a real fear to me. And I don't know if that's something just irrational.
The thing is, it's not necessarily that it's a white people thing. It's a writer thing. You go into your writing afraid. Like, I have like 4 commissions I should be doing. And I'm like, I don't know if I can do them. You know, and I'm writing about Poe, I'm writing about Finn, I'm writing about characters of color as a person of color, and no matter who you are, there's a point where if you go into something going, I 100% know what this is about, how I can make this perfect, that's when you fuck up. Mm-hmm. This recent, it tends to be in response to writing black characters, where they go, oh, I'm so afraid of writing this character because I'm worried about the backlash. They're using it as a shield. You probably are not, you know, because you are still writing these characters. But the, I'm worried about social justice warriors getting angry at me, so I'm not going to write characters of color, is you going, I never intended to write characters of color, so now I have an excuse. It's blaming the people who want representation for you not giving them representation.
Sure. You made me feel more confident even just saying that, because it's, I mean, it's also like, you know, I'm also paranoid about, it's set in England and there's a lot of law, and I'm paranoid about getting that wrong too, right? So there's a lot of things I'm paranoid about getting wrong, and I shouldn't single one thing out or the other, I guess, you know?
And even always do beta readers.
Yes, right. So,
and maybe if people are only paranoid about getting characters of color wrong, they should be more paranoid about getting other things wrong in their fix, because there's probably something else they ought to be paranoid about also.
Like men. I have read some very unrealistic men in my years as a slasher. I don't know, not all men, but sometimes they don't weep all the time.
I have really interesting thoughts about that. I have 6 brothers, so 3 of my brothers are queer. So I definitely have experienced different levels of, or different aspects of masculinity via my brothers. So the closest thing I'd see to an unrealistic male are, like, when you're reading, and this outs me as a horrible, horrible, kinky weirdo, I read the hell out of Alpha Beta Omega fic. I do.
Flourish writes it.
Oh my God.
I don't write very much of it. I've written a very small amount of it. But
okay,
I
she has written
it a lot when I wrote it.
But there's no shame here.
I love it. I've written like 4 stories, and I'm like, well, I'm never going to write actual pregnancy because for multiple levels, that's not going to work. But like with the characterization, where the dynamics tend to be kind of heteronormative. It's someone's a protector, someone's the pregnant-er. That's not a word.
I'm going with pregnant-er from now on.
And I'm in the DC fandom mainly. That's actually my main fandom. I'm into the Star Wars fandom because my family is. Like, that's a generational thing. My mom was my age in the 70s when she took my sister to see it as a child. And so when Star Wars came out in December, I was like, oh my God, small children that I live with, let's go. We saw it together. So it's just generational. But I wasn't active in writing until recently. And even then, it's more like, I have 50 million drafts. When will I pick one? Mm-hmm. You know, with the DC fandom, you have like Batman and all of the Robins, and they're precious and perfect, right? And there's one, Tim Drake, that everyone writes as just weepy. And there's nothing in the text that supports that, because some characters definitely like bawl. They're like, oh my God, my parents died, I'm broken.
Some characters.
His parents died, and with the, yeah.
Oh, you're saying some characterizations of him, of this one character, his parents. I thought you were subtweeting Batman just there, but that's all of them.
I might have been. I feel like sometimes I'm talking shit about Batman way more than I should. So the idea of unreal men, or weirdly, like the idea of feminine men as problematic, is it self problematic? Like that's when we read slash fiction and we go, oh, well, guys don't act like this. Well, there are a lot of guys on the planet.
Right.
The issue is when heteronormativity in slash fandom kind of subsumes actual character personalities.
Sure.
So if you're writing Sinpo and you have Sin always at the top as the big dicked black guy fucking Poe who's always gagging for it, he's a slut. You know, you frame his sexuality in neediness, in hypersexuality, as opposed to an actual sexual identity, because hypersexuality is not one. You know, that's when problems come into place, both on the aspect of heteronormativity, but then also racism, because as the first meta that Francesca wrote with the kink, actually, she goes into this whole thing about how with kink shaming, it's because people don't want to read about Finn having a gigantic penis. And it's like, well, he's black. There are really huge reasons why fandoms over-focus on Finn having a huge penis and always topping aren't about kink. They become about race. Your size kink doesn't trump centuries of, you know, body-focused racism that framed black men with large bodies, I'm talking not only in penis size, but like physically, as sexually aggressive, sexually open. You know, like that doesn't divorce from your kink. And also, John Boyega and Oscar Isaac are both 5'9". There is no size kink there. They are the same height. Yes, John Boyega is a little thick, but...
but if you want size kink, you really need to get Phasma in here.
Oh my god!
That's
please
size.
Don't talk to me about my space wife.
Oh. Phasma is my favorite. I love her.
Okay, but I feel like that then kind of brings us back into the trap of, well, if your thing is size kink, right? If you like love that and you're writing porn and you just want to write size kink, then you're going to write the white guys, right? So that's
hard. Right. Except responsibility is something that people kind of push aside, especially in kink spaces and fandom, because they go, well, I can't write the kink I want to write the way I want to write it, so I'm not going to write it. And that's doing a disservice to fandom. You can absolutely write size kink. You can focus on, and this is going to get not safe for work. I mean, seriously, not safe for work.
Good morning.
You can focus on the weight of Finn's body holding Poe down, because we know John Boyega is thick. He's beefy. We got this. You know, you focus on the physicality, the act of being bigger, not in a threatening sense the way that fandom approaches it, where you have Finn just basically ripped from... I don't know if you've ever heard of the book Mandingo. My mom loved it. It's so racist. But it focuses on sexualizing black male bodies. And this is from like the 60s or the 70s. It's really, really racist. Their idea of size kink is decidedly connected to, mm-hmm. you know, black men being more aggressive. You know, right. Why is fandom never focusing on Poe lovingly cradling Finn, memorizing the shape of his body, the differences between their body? It's always Finn is bigger, he has to fuck Poe. There is no tenderness. And this is a generalization when I say there is no tenderness. Like when you go through your ships, when you go through the stories for Finn and Poe, you tend to see just the same dynamic of Poe is sexually eager and open, and Finn doesn't know anything, but when he figures it out, you know, it's off to Pound Town on Poe's ass. Yes.
That's interesting. Pound so that's, because I haven't read any Star Wars fic, but is that, you say that that's a trend that you've read?
Yes. And it's not exclusive to the Star Wars fandom. Any fandom wherein a huge pairing is an interracial male-male ship where one guy is white. So Tony and Rhodey. Then even with Sam and Steve, one of the earliest Sam Steve stories I read, it's still on Archive of Our Own. I don't remember what it's called, but it's so bad. And it was written by a biracial black woman, and it is literally, Steve has a thing for big black penises. And just dehumanizing sex framed as kink. And in all of the responses, it's like, oh, well, this is what gets me off. A lot of things get people off that really shouldn't, and that's okay. Like, I have a post, it's been in progress for like 4 years, because I know that the pushback is going to be really, really horrible. It's called, Your Kink Is Not Okay and That's Okay, because of the whole fandom thing where it's, your kink is not my kink, but that's okay. That's not how it works. Mm. Because fandom is the real world. So your desire to see a white guy held down and fucked brutally by a black guy is tied into more than your size kink. It's tied into societal expectations for black masculinity. You know, it's the same way why when the few white guy Asian guy ships you have, tend to have the Asian guy framed as submissive, in air quotes, which didn't come across very well. Because we expect certain things based on a white supremacist society. And you don't stop being in that society just because you're in fandom. In fact, fandom kind of zooms in because it's so insular.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I don't want to have to cut us off here, but we're...
Yeah, I think we probably should. That's actually, I mean, that actually isn't a bad place to end on, I don't think. I think it's a nice...
depressing spot to end about how... the world is problematic. It is, though.
It is.
That's true, you know?
Zena, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate it, and we look forward to having you back on to talk about something that is only race-related in as much as everything else in our world is, i.e. DC fandom.
Thanks for having me. Y'all are great. And this was super fun, actually.
Yeah!
Awesome. Success! Well, good. Yay. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, that was an awesome conversation.
I feel simultaneously invigorated and also really depressed about the state of fandom.
Great.
I think that's...
fascination and frustration.
Oh, goddamn, you put your finger right on it.
I believe that was Henry.
Yeah, Henry Jenkins. That's his thing.
So that was great. We have one more statement, and I believe Zvi is another old friend of yours. Is that true?
Well, I'm not sure I'd go so far as friend, but wow. Certainly.
Wow.
Well, no, I don't mean that in a rude way. I just mean that I think that I have been more of an admirer from afar of hers since about 2007 when she tangled with some racist Harry Potter fandom people and unknowingly led to me beginning to think about race as a thing that went beyond, you know.
Wow. Wait, that's a... She's a huge part of your evolution as a human being, then.
Yeah, but I don't think I've ever actually said that to her. So. Wow, hey, Zvi, congrats. Now you know.
You have passed along some of Zvi's writing to me, so I am very excited to hear what she has recorded for us.
All right, let's roll it.
Hi, I'm Zvi Likes TV. My current fandoms are the Washington Capitals of the NHL, comics, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I started out in X-Files in the fifth season, and I've done fic, I've written meta, I've run challenges, I've conducted panels at cons. I'm also a short, fat, black, cisgendered, Unitarian Universalist American dyke. And I say that because all of these discussions of race and fandom are coming from people from different places, and we're not always identifying each other and identifying ourselves, and I think that contributes to some of the misunderstandings that we run into. I have been writing about racism, well, not necessarily racism, but I've been writing about race in fandom since 2002. I wrote a piece called Jazz and the Machine and a second piece called Jazz and the Machine Call. Both of which were about fandom just ignoring characters that I thought fit the profile, were played by black actors, and weren't getting any traction. And the sort of thing that I mean would be Han and Lando in Star Wars, Crockett and Tubbs in Miami Vice, Forrest and Riley from Buffy. I believe that one was the one that broke this camel's back. Clark and Pete from Smallville. Henry from The Sentinel getting ignored in favor of race. Even if you watch The Sentinel, you may not remember either of those characters. They were quite minor. Sean and Gus from Psych. Danny and anybody on Teen Wolf, as opposed to Steric. Travis McCoy and Gabe Zaporta in Bandom. And Sam and Steve in the MCU. There's just this pattern of characters that have relationships and situations that are traditionally flashy, that slashers don't go for, and I find that troubling and unwelcoming. But I do think it's gotten better. I know it's gotten better because people do write Finn and Poe. I realize that this current imbroglio is about Finn and Poe, but it's only about Finn and Poe because they got off to such a huge start. And they're still, as acknowledged by everyone, a big deal. Alec Hardison got written in Leverage and was great. And even in a fandom as sort of white and weird as professional hockey, P.K. Subban and Carey Price are an acknowledged, quote-unquote, acknowledged NRPF couple. So things are different from days in the past. They're still not perfect, but I have in the past had fandom drive me to tears on issues of race. I've had fandom make me incredibly furious. I wrote a piece about a Harry Potter community using the word miscegenation to describe Dean and Luna fic, and people were tagging human magical creature fic and human goat fic on the same prompt. And this was because the way that they had defined miscegenation was so removed from the meaning of miscegenation, which, for those of you who don't know, miscegenation is describing the relationship between a white person and a person who is not white as something which pollutes the whiteness. And it was introduced as a word and as a concept during the American Civil War to drum up opposition to abolitionists. So it doesn't have a neutral meaning, and they presented it as if it does. They treated me as if I were delusional for bringing this issue to them, the runners of the community, when I brought the issue to their attention. That, I think, is one of the things that's changed. People don't assume that if a person of color is bringing up a race issue, they've somehow gone off the deep end and are seeing things that just aren't there. I mean, that's not everyone, but it's not the first and default response. I think that we have finally communicated that there is racism inherent in the system. So one of the things that I think has changed about the way we talk about race is that acceptance that there's racism inherent in the system. And if I could get one thing through to white people, particularly American white people, it would be that acknowledging that you have done a racist thing is not a confession of mortal sin. It's not a judgment that your character is besmirched and you are inexcusably, irretrievably evil. It's not a confession to a crime. Being racist is a perfectly normal thing for white people to do in the United States. White people do it all the time. And the panic and furious denial when someone points out that a white person has done a racist thing just compounds the first error and makes correcting and improving so much more difficult than it has to be. There's nothing else that people take away from this episode of your podcast. I want them to understand two things. One, fans of color keep having this conversation because we are fans. Fandom is our home. You know, I've been here for 15 years. I've lived with people because of fandom. I've fucked people because of fandom. Most of my current friends came through fandom. So I live here. That's why I keep saying this place isn't right. This racism is affecting me. This violence inherent in the system, I'm not going to allow to persist because fandom is mine and I am here. That's why fans of color keep talking about it. The reason we keep talking about these characters not getting enough love, not getting enough attention, is because we see these characters and they're the kinds of characters that fandom already likes. They're in the sorts of relationships that fandom traditionally works with. We are not trying to get people to write joyless duty fic because they're being politically correct. We want them to write sexy romances about these sexy dudes, because that's what fandom does. We want them to enjoy those badass, super competent women, the guy with the damage. These are the toys that are on the table, and we want you to play with them, and we want you to play with us. And that's why we keep talking about these characters.
first of all, what a delight that literally we could just like say like, hey, come on our podcast, and we can get like 10 incredibly smart people to come. Just like, I don't know. I love fandom so much. Is that sappy? Am I being sappy?
You're not being sappy.
I'm supposed to be cynical.
I was not cynical about the response to this episode because I felt like, holy shit. And I felt like there was so much that people talked about that we could just, I don't know. I came out of this episode feeling like I had 50 different ideas for episodes.
Oh, that's great. This is a content generator.
Not like that.
Hashtag biz. All right. Okay. So we actually discussed this in advance, what we are going to say at the conclusion of this, because I think that it could sound trite to say, well, here we're the white hosts and here's what we learned, you know? That being said, we learned some stuff, and it's probably worth discussing it.
Right. On the one hand, it feels silly to be like, hey, and here's what we learned. But on the other hand, actually, like, one of the things that I think we both realized as we did this episode was that even though we have tried to talk and think about race, we have not done a very good job of it. The fact that we could have 10 people who we've never had on the podcast before all just turn up and be willing to share their, like, thoughts and feelings, and they all have incredible stuff to talk about fandom, and yet we haven't had very many people of color on this podcast to this point.
Well, okay, so this ties into something that I've been thinking about, though, and something that I kind of wanted to float as we discussed our takeaways. And I'm not actually sure any of it made it into the recording, but I remember distinctly, and I'm sure she won't mind me mentioning it, after I hung up with you and I talked to Cleo for a while, she was talking about, I feel like I'm reframing this sentence 17 times, so I apologize. But, you know, we're talking a lot about the kind of cycles and flashpoints and the kind of, you know, white people suddenly like paying attention to the discourse that people of color are having constantly.
It's us.
Yes. And she was saying that she, you know, people of color who write the most passionate stuff. And I think that she says that in something that made in the recording, you know, she tries to write stuff that's a little more nuanced, but it's hard, you know, because you get more response if you're more passionate, which is something I definitely see across the board, not just about race. But she was saying,
it's true on every issue.
Yeah, absolutely. But she was saying that she sees white people reblogging the most passionate stuff and putting in the tags like, this is important.
It's so important.
And then that's it, you know, or like, I was talking to a good friend of mine who is a person of color who was complaining about white people tweeting about, Salagna, I hope you don't mind me bringing this up in the air, white people tweeting about or writing posts about things that are like, hey, other white people, don't write about Lemonade or Beyonce's Lemonade. And she was like, who are you talking to? Right? And it's just like,
yeah, as a person who wrote about Beyonce's Lemonade, not a single person of color like wrote to me and was like, shut the fuck up, that didn't happen.
Well, I think it's a valid point. I don't think that what people need to talk about, like, what Lemonade means. I think that is not a part, like, we can just shut up.
But on the other hand, like, we also probably don't need to tell other white people to shut up, like,
right? So this is what, and I actually saw this in action. I saw, you know, a white person that I know, right, like, PSA, don't write about Lemonade, fellow white people. And then I looked in and like 7 white people liked it. And I was like, great, I'm glad we all performed that. No, we all, I didn't participate in this. I'm not trying to absolve myself.
only by observation did you participate, Elizabeth.
But it can feel performative, and it can feel like in these flashpoints, I'll see, you know, people coming out of the woodwork being like, this is so important. And it's like, I'm going to own up to this. I don't think I talk about race enough. I definitely have obviously written about it in my capacity as a like liberal journalist, but even then wasn't sure I was doing the right thing because I was concerned that I was speaking over people's experiences. And so then I'm like, you know, racked with guilt and twisting myself into knots and all this stuff. And this isn't supposed to be my therapy session.
Right.
But like,
no, but I think this relates a little bit to us talking about like what we want to do with the podcast in the future, because I think that saying we don't want to talk about race because we're 3 white women on the one hand is sort of a good impulse, but on the other hand, we ought to talk about race more because we talk about queerness, we talk about being female. It shouldn't be something that we just not talk about forever.
Right, but I think the problem is that I think that gender and sexuality and sex are going to our perspectives and our positions on like the bottom of the axis of those axes of privilege, as I like to use the expression axis of privilege, that's going to color everything we talk about, right? This is a thing, like, and this is the conversation I've seen over and over again the last few weeks, is people saying it's always about race, right? People of color, and people, white people saying, but it's not. And they're like, well, for us it is, right? And so for you and me, it is always going to be about the places where we do not have the privilege.
Right.
Which is in terms of sexuality and sex and gender. But what position are we in when we are in the position of privilege on that axis? Like,
right.
And at what point are we allies? And at what point are we like that white girl, you know, just like being like very frustrating. If we are constantly engaging with race and potentially speaking over the experiences of people of color, which is something I also see where people are doing. It's just so complicated.
Right. But is it fair for us to say that like some of our takeaways are we need to think about this more and work on it in the podcast?
Takeaways.
Yes. Takeaways. No, like, and have more people of color come on this podcast.
That I want to do.
And both about and not about directly about race.
Well, here's the thing. This is what I would love. And obviously I loved this episode because I love these pair of episodes because I loved that it was just a frank discussion about race from people of color who were excited to have it. You know, this is the kind of thing where I don't think it's the responsibility of anyone to educate anyone else, but these are people who want to educate. And I love everyone involved so much. So thank you,
people. Thank you, all of you contributors. You are the best.
Seriously. But just in the way that I'm saying gender, sexuality, or sexual identity are going to color everything we talk about, with guests of color, like, that's obviously going to color everything they talk about, even if you're not, you know, you don't have to come on and just talk about race if you don't want to. That, I think, is our failing. We have had a few guests of color on, but I don't think we've had enough, frankly.
Right.
So
we're going to try and do that. And try and is, I think, the right way to put it, because even though it's not really grammatical, we are definitely going to make the attempt. And I am going to assume that we will succeed because I think it's really important.
And we're confident people.
And okay. We're confident people. But then individually.
Yeah, let's talk about ourselves as fans, though, because this is a fandom podcast and everything we just said we could have been a podcast about literally anything just hosted by white people. So,
well, one thing that this made me think about a lot is I used to be in Sleepy Hollow fandom, and I peaced out pretty hard when it became clear that, like, several seasons ago, when it became clear to me that Nikki Beharie, that Abby Mills, was not going to get a lot of screen time. And I sort of ran towards a bunch of very white fandoms, right? Like, I mean, One Direction is not all white, but my fanfic is not about Zayn primarily, right? So there it is.
Your One Direction has been all white, Flourish. You showed up too late.
Yeah, I showed up after Zayn left the band. So anyway, it got me thinking about, like, why did I leave Sleepy Hollow? Maybe I should write more fic there, even though, you know, like, what is fic for if not to fix the things that were messed up by Hollywood?
Sure. Well, that's an interesting example, whereas I don't have anything like that, and that's a problem. I think that one thing that I've taken away from these episodes and also the discourse in the last few weeks, one post I really loved, did you happen to read, I don't know the title, and I will put it in the show notes after I look it up. It was in the Fan Meta Reader. Do you know Lori Morimoto's site?
Mm-hmm.
So for anyone who's not familiar, Lori Morimoto is an Akka fan, and she has a site where she takes, like, sometimes fandom specific, but sometimes kind of pan fandom meta from Tumblr, and with permission republishes it on a separate non-Tumblr site, which I believe she started to kind of expose academia to the really great and, like, rigorous writing that happens on Tumblr on a regular basis. Full disclosure, she republished something I wrote that was a big subtweet to the Sherlock fandom.
So that was Hurricane Flourish coming in as I snorted there.
Anyway, she posted last week, it was a guest post from a woman talking about women of color and ships and how people don't want to ship women of color as a broad aggregate. Obviously, plenty of people do. But, like, fandom, if we're talking about at large, tends not to ship women of color in any ships. And she was talking about all the buck passing excuses, basically. Things like, oh, I just don't see chemistry between that female character of color and whoever. or, oh, she's too good for any of these people, you know? She's yeah. obviously a line I trot out all the time. I'm like, Ray doesn't need to be with any of these clowns, you know? Or like Hermione. I'm like, get away from these losers. Go, go. But, you know, like, that's not really fair if that's a line that's disproportionately applied to women of color, which I think it is. One of my favorite things about this piece is actually the first line where she said, this isn't about your ship, capital Y, capital S. You know, and she was like, I'm going to talk about Musketeers fandom, but like, I'm not coming at your ship, basically. I'm paraphrasing here, but like that, you know, that was basically, because I think what happens is, you know, usually these conversations are framed around a certain fandom or a certain ship. Why does everyone like Kylux? Why does everyone like Stucky?
Right.
Instead of, you know, why do people like Captain America and Tony Stark and not them with either of their black BFFs?
Right.
And then you get into this hair splitting, like, well, you know, I think, you know, Sam Wilson and Steve are just friends. Can't you tell? They're just bros, you know, like blah, blah. Or, you know, like I've edited this episode and I paraphrase some of those arguments about that particular ship, actually. And I think if we could get past that. And we could say, and I think that's a great place to start framing it too, saying it's not about X or Y or Z. It's about, you know, the fact that this is the whole alphabet over and over again. I don't know if that was a clumsy metaphor, but like.
No, it's about a pattern of, it's not even necessarily about your personal pattern of shipping. It's about the pattern of shipping of everybody in general. And so if you really want to do something positive for this issue.
Well, Flourish, I don't know. What do I do?
I don't know. I mean, I think that I feel like one of the things I'm doing is.
I'm not you. Me. Go ahead. Tell me what you're doing.
Well, I'm trying to say about me because I don't know how to prescribe to you, but like Rukmini recommended an exchange for characters of color and I'm going to sign up.
Right.
I mean, because I would like to, instead of when I get disappointed in a fandom, like running back to a fandom that's all about white people, I'd like to be like, no, I'm going to explore something else and try and write more fic with chromatic characters in it, instead of going back to sort of what I find as a white person to be my comfort zone.
Mm, okay. All right.
Not because I think that, like, I'm necessarily going to, like, through this exchange, find my next one true pairing.
Right.
But just because, like, how will I know if I don't actually, like, give myself the space to think about it?
Well,
and I clearly don't give myself the space to think about it normally because, like, structural racism, right?
Sure, right. You know, it's tricky for me to think about because I'm not in the same, you know, and I think that I am probably more similar to a lot of people in fandom in the sense of like, if I were to go sign up for a fic exchange, it would be the first fic I ever posted ever if I wrote it. Which is to say, you know, like, I don't know if I'm there. I don't know if I'm a creator in that capacity. So, and that means I'm in the majority. And so everyone who doesn't create publicly, what can you do? Is it enough? You know, I think it was Cleo who was saying, kudo fix. Is it enough to interrogate yourself? I don't think that. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I don't know that we're going to solve this issue tonight, but.
I thought we were here to solve the issue.
Hate to break it to you, buddy.
That's why I thought we did all this. I thought we were going to solve it for me. It's all about me now.
Forever. Once and forever.
I mean, I feel like step one is actually interrogating yourself, which I have been doing a lot, you know. And it's just weird for me because it's like I wrote something about this recently. I was like, oh well, you know, I have white guy ships, but like only a couple. I'm not one of those migratory / fangirls, you know, because that's what it feels like when I say it. It's like,
yeah,
I'm not like that, but it is factually true that I have had a very tiny number of I spend a long time wound dwelling in just a couple of ships. That being said, they have all been white guys. So, you know, it's easy for me to pass the buck and say, this is the media I've been given. But that's lazy and sad. And I want to queer this shit. So why do I accept a status quo of blanket whiteness?
It sounds like you have learned things.
I mean, I feel like this is something I was aware of.
But it sounds like you have come to some internal determination about things, which is probably a step.
Yeah, it's just one more layer to add to my sad, cynical, resigned state that I now occupy in fandom. So that's fine.
Well, I think that actually one of the most wonderful things about this episode was that I didn't feel cynical at the end of it. I felt really positive and I felt like I wanted to go and write some fanfic about Finn being a tortured former stormtrooper. I really want to write that now. So I might do it.
I would love to read that.
All right. Well, I've promised to write about a billion fics at Yeah, you know what? I was just thinking about this. And I've never written any of them.
You promised so much to me. I never got panty rated Slytherin.
I don't know what to say. I'm an overpromiser.
Since I'm back in Harry Potter, could you write Finn in Harry Potter?
Yes, I'll do that.
Really? Okay.
There we go. All right. Panty rated Slytherin featuring Finn.
I don't think Finn's a Slytherin.
Really?
He's a Gryffindor. Hufflepuff.
Right. He's panty rating Slytherin.
Okay.
He is a Gryffindor who is panty rating Slytherin house. The end.
Who's going to be the Slytherin that catches him? And
I don't know. It's going to be a mystery. We'll find out.
Okay.
All right, guys. Stay tuned in for this.
What a great outcome.
Okay. But next week. But we actually should talk about what we're doing next week. Next 2 weeks. Next episode.
Okay. So the next episode.
It's going to be the long-awaited fourth wall episode. Tune in for that. In the meantime, if you guys have any responses to this episode, anybody who's been listening, we're going to be trying to curate some links just of things people have said in response on our Tumblr. So please, if you write anything about it, just make sure that we know about it, and we'll try and curate sort of a list of people's commentary, as we always try to do to our episodes.
Okay, well, this has been great, and we should do it again.
And thank you to all of our contributors: Holly, Rukmini, Shadowkeeper, Cleo, PJ, Roz, Jeffrey, Tracy, Zena, and Zvi. And we hope to have all of you guys back on the podcast. As I think I've already said, I have thought of 50 new ideas based on this, so we're going to make it happen.
Yes, please do. And we would love to hear anyone's thoughts about any of our contributors' contributions.
All right. I'll talk to you next time, Elizabeth.
Okay, bye, Flourish.
Bye. The opinions expressed in this podcast are not those of Stratus Media Ventures, Chimera Media Group, Chaotic Good, or our clients, or our employers, or anyone's except our own.